Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. Delighted that you could join us. My name is Kieran Taveman. As always, I'm joined by my friend, I would usually say across the pond, but I am his side of the pond on this occasion, my good friend JJ Duke in New York. Well, Connecticut to be more specific. How are you, mate?
Hey, you're close enough. Yeah, good. I think we're maybe one time zone apart right now. I think we're about as close as we possibly can to be on the same time zone, same time wave, without actually being in the same room.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm obviously currently in New Orleans after spending a few days in Orlando. Got the US Women's National Team game against South Korea to look forward to in a couple of days' time. But I mentioned there, been in Orlando for a few days. Obviously, we brought you a couple of podcasts over the weekend. We brought you some audio from the media day that we had ahead of the NWSL Championship game. We then brought you a little bit of a preview alongside Dan Aletta and Alison Lee. This is our podcast to have a little bit of a look back at that championship final, JJ. It wasn't the game that we wanted to finish off what was a really promising NWSL season. It got away from the referee very, very early on and turned out to be a little bit of a battle in the end. I think Lindsay Horan in her post-match interview described it as brutal, and I think that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, it does. I was going through a couple of thoughts about this match. You always expect that finals, they're not going to be like what we saw in the Euros this year, right? Wide open, entertaining, free-flowing. More often than not, we see finals that are pretty gritty. Teams are usually cautious about making errors in the back, so you don't often see players going forward. I think the last few Champions League finals have either gone to extra time or penalties. You can correct me on that, but yeah, I wasn't surprised, to be fair. But yeah, I think that this match, in terms of its physicality, was one that really marred what could have been a very nice spectacle, as you said, to a season that's been interesting. It's been less topsy-turvy than what we've had in years past. But I think, yeah, this one wasn't really one that a lot of people are going to be remembering for a long time.
No, unfortunately not. I think the key was very, very early on when we saw a challenge that was very late by Tobin Heath on Taylor Smith. And Taylor Smith had to go off literally within 10 minutes of suffering that challenge. She'd suffered quite a bad shoulder injury, and you could see she was in quite a lot of pain. The referee didn't book Tobin for that challenge, and unfortunately what that did is it set the tone for the rest of the match. There were some very borderline challenges. There were challenges that went unpunished. There should have been more bookings. I think in total there were 3 bookings in the entire match. All of those bookings went to the Portland Thorns. But what it did was, because the referee, in my mind, wasn't protecting the North Carolina Courage players early on, what that then resulted in was the North Carolina Courage players saying, well, if you're not going to protect us, we're going to have to take matters into our own hands. And then we saw some borderline challenges from them as well. But because of that, the game never really got any rhythm. And other than a few saves by Adriana Franch, I don't really remember Caitlin Rowland having anything to do other than pick the ball out of the net.
Well, the statistics will say officially she had 2 saves, but I think those are the qualifications of a 92 hopper to short. I think that's a baseball reference for you. But yeah, they're pretty much just shots that not really testing. And I want to go, not to really beleaguer the point about the referee, but I was thinking about this a little bit and want to hear your take on this. Now, I know that the referees here for this league, they operate under the PRO, Pro Professional Referees Organization, and they're referees that they see these matches pretty much week in, week out. There's not too many changes. We have like a group of what I think a dozen officials or so, maybe less than that, that you know preside over these matches, and the referees that get used to the player personnel and the ones that are, you know, they're a little bit more familiar, not always at the same time up to the level of having that, you know, communication and, you know, really knowing the tendencies of some. But I was thinking about it, and, you know, over the past few years, Kieran, when you talk about especially American referees in the women's game, there haven't been too many new referees. You know, for years it was always Carrie Seitz who had the job, and then Katya Korolava, Karen Apt has had a few goes, Margaret Domka as well. But you need to start breaking in, if you will, new referees or referees that might have an opportunity to officiate the new level. And one way to do it is to referee high priority name or matches. So I don't think this is a total knock on Danielle Chesky. I think it's one of those that the occasion might have gotten to her a little bit. And, you know, if she booked Tobin early, I think it would have been a different match. But yeah, it's a learning experience, but unfortunately at the same time, it comes at really, you know, the tail end of the season, one that you can't really afford to have mistakes. But I'm curious, because on your side with the WSL, this has been a conversation that's been going on for a while where referees, they don't often have, you know, opportunities to work those league matches week in, week out, and they don't establish that relationship with the players. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, if I'm honest with you. In terms of the refereeing over here, the levels that they referee will vary. Some of the referees in the women's game will referee non-league men's matches as well. So, as you say, they're kind of being pulled from pillar to post. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to know what listeners' views are, but I don't know how important that relationship is with players. Are you, for example, if Danielle Chesky has refereed Lindsay Horan more than she has Jessica McDonald, for example, does that mean that she's got a better relationship with Lindsay, therefore some of the decisions may sometimes go in her favour a little bit more? I really don't know. I'm sure that's not the case, but I think the disappointing thing for me is I understand that sometimes referees miss things, and when they miss things, you just have to admit that the game is played at a pace, and occasionally referees will miss things because they, you know, the game is being played at such a high tempo. She called these fouls that were being made, but didn't deem them severe enough to punish, and that's where my confusion comes from. If you miss things, fine. You know, it happens. We understand that referees can't call everything. The game is, as I said, played at such a ferocious pace. But when you are actually calling these fouls and then not dishing out yellow cards, what that is saying to the players is, well, hold on a minute, we've got a referee here that's quite lenient. Let's keep this physicality up. Let's keep pressing hard because we're not going to get punished for it. And that sets a very different tone for the rest of the game.
Yeah, agreed. And I think you're talking about missed calls and things like that. And at the end of the day, we're all human. I mean, there is the side of error, and we just accept that. And then this kind of, interestingly enough, correlates to the goal that Portland scored. Because let's face it, we've seen the video. We've seen the snapshots on social media. Was Horan on or offside? I think that's another one of those that you're going to always have question about. But yeah, I think I'm not disagreeing how you went about that. I just think that, you know, hopefully these moments that, you know, the referees and, you know, for the whole organization as well, you look on an opportunity to improve, and, you know, we don't see these moments down the road.
Yeah, it's a shame that we're having to talk about a final and the referee is the main topic of discussion. It's never nice to bash referees. I don't enjoy it for one minute. I want to be talking about the players, and we should talk about the players a bit more, mate. It was a goal, as you just mentioned there, from Lindsay Horan that won the game. I think, other than on the opposition side, I think Sam Mewis and McCall Zaboni, I think their stock for me has probably risen more than anyone in this league over the course of the season. But Lindsay Horan is the player that I look at now. Obviously came to the Portland Thorns from PSG as one of the US's most promising forwards, has been kind of converted into a midfielder. And she's thriving in that role, isn't she? That role allows her to make late runs into the box. It allows her to have more of an influence on the game. She can spray passes out wide, start counter-attacks when Portland have won the ball back. I personally think Emily Menges was the MVP of that final, but I wasn't massively upset that Lindsay got it, because I think it was testament not just to the game that she had, but the season that she had with the Thorns.
Yeah, agreed. And I think for me, it's one of those where when Horan elected to pass on that scholarship to North Carolina to go to PSG. You look at it now, and I think that move absolutely was massive for her, because not only, you know, she was a kid at that time, let's face it, I think, what, 18 years old when she made that move out there, but she allowed herself to mature not only as a professional, but as, you know, an athlete, you know, to really integrate herself well with the rigors of the sport, work on her fundamentals, get her technique down best, where I think, you know, among the U.S. ranks right now, she might be one of the most cool and composed players on the ball, and one of those players that can see this game kind of as like a chess match. You know, one of those, you always ask out of a midfielder to be two or three steps ahead of everybody else and trying to pick apart defenses. And I truly think right now she has hit that level, and I think there may even be more to come out of her over the next couple of years. It's a big time right now for Horan's career, because I think that not only may she be one of the best players in the U.S. level, but I think she could be really one of the best midfielders in the world.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. I really rate Lindsay, and you can see her game coming on leaps and bounds at the moment. I mentioned on the opposition, McCall Zaboni and Sam Mewis in particular. I mean, it didn't go their way on Saturday, but I mean, we saw the effort from Sam Mewis in the first half, where she capitalized on the Thorns' mistake, looped the ball from what, 45 yards, 50 yards over Adriana France's head and cannoned back off the crossbar. If that goes in again, we might have a different game. But those two in particular, for me, with the courage, really promising seasons, and it was good to see both of them in the NWSL first 11 that was named last week as well. I think that is a testament to how well those two have played. And in tandem, I think they were the best midfield duo in the league over the course of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, again, it's one of those things where their chemistry has just continued to grow. And I kind of mentioned it in the piece I wrote about the Thorns, that, you know, this was the year that they needed to win this title, because they literally had everything clicking at such a high level. And I think, you know, right now, they can build on this, obviously, for the next couple of years. There's going to be some players, you know, going in and out with national team camps as we get closer and closer to World Cup qualifying, and as well as the big one in 2019 in France. But yeah, you know, it's a good time right now to be a supporter of the Portland Thorns, because you have literally everything working at a high level. The support was fantastic, especially, you know, we saw with the team getting back just a couple of days ago prior to recording, and, you know, the reception that they got. I mean, this is it's a really good time to have stock in the Thorns.
Yeah, without doubt. They've got a little bit of recruiting to do, though, haven't they? Because they're going to lose Amandine Henry, who is moving back to Lyon, and Nadia Nadim, who has joined Manchester City and will commence her career there in January. My understanding as well is that Dagny Brynjarsdóttir is out of contract at the end of this season, so I'd be interested to see if she signs on with the Thorns again for next season. But managed to get a little bit of audio from Dagny and from Nadia in the mix zone after the game, and obviously they were very, very delighted with the victory. So here's a little bit of reaction from Dagny Brynjarsdóttir and Nadia Nadim.
So, talk about that win.
It was a tough win. I mean, I just thought both teams battled hard, and yeah, we got that goal in. Lindsay scored an amazing goal, and obviously there was not many chances. I felt like it was like a typical final game. Not many chances on either side, but I thought after we scored the goal, we battled hard, and we made sure they wouldn't have that many open chances, and I thought we finished the game pretty well.
The way the season started for you with the injury, this must have seemed a long way away a few months ago. Does that make it extra special?
Yeah, for sure. And at some point with my injury, I didn't know I was going to play at all this year. And now suddenly I played in the Euros, and I got second in the league, and now we won the championship. It's just been amazing. After when we were cheering with the fans in the end, I like almost cry, I'm not gonna lie. I was like, it's been a long year, and I've been through a lot. It's been tough. I've been playing a lot of positions this year, but I made it and we won.
It must be the perfect end for you at Portland before you head to Manchester. How special is it?
This is really, really special. I mean, I wanted to be a win this league, so I could finish on a high. This is one of the goals I had, and I just feel mission accomplished, you know. And now, looking forward to the season with the city. So this has been amazing. I've learned a lot, and standing here with a medal and the trophy is the highlight of the season.
Mark Parsons in his press conference talked about, you'd say, that the Nadia effect, and he said about your contagious personality. How special has your time with Portland been? I know it's a tough club to leave, I'm sure. I know you were looking forward to the trip to Manchester, but how special is it and how tough is it to go?
I mean, it was really tough. Like, it's been amazing to be a part of the journey, and Portland Thorn is an amazing club. The fans, I can't even describe the way. Did you see today? Like, everyone flew 7 hours to watch the game. No one does that anywhere else. So it's going to be so hard to leave all this behind. But I felt I've contributed my part. I felt I've played my heart out on the field, and I feel that I've helped the team, you know, to reach here. So I'm leaving satisfied, and I think the fans are also happy with what I've been doing. So
JJ, we move on. The NWSL Championship game wasn't the only big game to take place in the last week. The UEFA Women's Champions League round of 32 second legs took place, and we saw in the first legs Chelsea overcome Bayern Munich 1-0, which was a huge result for them and gave them an advantage going into the second leg. Was always going to be a difficult task, but they managed to get the job done. Lost 2-1 in Munich, but went through on away goals. Frank Kirby's goal proved crucial in the end. Massive result for Chelsea. I tweeted out that was them announcing themselves onto the European stage, without question their biggest result in their short time qualifying for European competitions. Massive, massive win for Chelsea, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you and I kind of discussed, because you were in attendance for that first leg, and how, you know, albeit sure defensively, Chelsea knew that they were going to have to put in a very big effort. And again, it was a similar state there. But we said that if Chelsea got the first goal in that second leg, then they were going to be in business, because then they're going to have to force Bayern to really, you know, open up, hit on the full attack. And, you know, I think it's interesting because Chelsea got through the first half and they didn't concede. And you're starting to think, okay, now surely, you know, this could be the day. Maybe they might need extra time to get through, but you're going to be okay with that because you're really forcing Bayern to go at it. And then when that goal came on the hour mark from Fran, I think that was the real dagger. Sure, the pressure came on the last few minutes, but Emma Hayes, over 180 minutes, had to be pretty much a masterclass at coaching and tactics to get this one right. And I know you're going to know a lot better than a lot of us. I think she probably did exactly what she needed to do.
Yeah, without question. I mean, I must confess, obviously, being out in the States, I didn't have a chance to see the game. But we talked at length about how she set the team up in the first leg, with playing Maria Forres-Dottir on the left as a left wing back and Magdalena Eriksson as left centre back behind her, and that nullified that threat that Bayern had going down the right. And I'm almost certain that she would have set the team up in a similar way in the second leg to really nullify the Bayern threats. And Bayern, if you give them space and you give them opportunity, players like Melanie Behringer are going to pull the strings and are going to punish you. And, you know, they were able to prevent that from happening. Yes, they've lost the game, but they've won the tie. So, huge, huge result for Chelsea. I look at some of the other results. There's too many games to go through individually. Obviously, Fiorentina managing to hold Fortuna Hjørring to a 0-0 draw in Denmark, which means they go through 2-1 on aggregate. It's their debut, of course, in the competition. Another debutant, Ajax, were unable to hold on to their lead. They obviously beat Brescia 1-0 in their first leg. They went down 2-0 in Italy. So disappointing for them. I guess one of the things we've got to do, mate, is we've got to give Lithuanian club Žintra a shout out, because they went to Zurich and won 2-1, the only seeded team to go out, along with Glasgow City, which we'll talk about in a minute, to go out in this round. So I must confess, I know nothing about that club, but I think Zurich were one of the clubs that came under scrutiny because they had to go through the qualifying round in August, and they came through that, and then all of a sudden, because of their history in the competition, they were a seeded team over the likes of Chelsea. And now they've gone out in the round of 32 to a team from Lithuania. It doesn't bode well for them, does it?
No, it doesn't. I think it's again the calling card to this system that needs so much improving. And it's based on, again, the strength of your nation, and European competitions as well as the club experience. And for Chelsea, you know, they've only been in a handful of times. Zurich has been a team that's really, not to say been there from the beginning, but, you know, it's Champions League. So you're the champions of your nation. Zurich has almost won the Swiss League, I think, every year that they've been, or nearly every year for that matter, and they continue to qualify for this competition. They get, you know, occasionally deep into a tournament. I think they've been to the quarterfinals, and you can correct me on this, once, I think, and maybe won a couple other ties. But yeah, now Ginstra getting through, I mean, going and winning 2-1 on the road is massive for, I think, any club. But yeah, that's a good one for them. And, you know, now it's gonna, you know, it's only gonna get tougher from here. But yeah, you gotta give credit. You know, not always do we see the teams from the small nations get knocked around over 180 minutes. They can hold their own. They can game plan, but they can hold their own.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. I need to correct myself, though, because looking at some of the other results, there were actually a few seeded teams that went out. Rosianka of Russia, they went out. They got hammered at home by Icelandic side Stjarnan. So they went out 5-1 on aggregate. And Zvezda from Russia, they were unable to hold on to their 1-0 lead that they obtained in France against Montpellier. Montpellier went to Russia and won 2-0. Must mention that one, mate, because Sofia Jakobsen got a double in that game. Sofia obviously suffered a really nasty injury last year and missed the Euros as a result of it. Good to see her back. And, you know, you want to see some of the big clubs progress into the later rounds so that you have competitive quarterfinals and semifinals, etc. But good to see Sofia Jakobsen backfiring, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I highlighted this match as maybe one of those to keep an eye on in the second leg, because obviously Zvezda went on the road, sat in a little bit, but they got themselves a result, and, you know, making that return trip from Montpellier, you know, their first time in this competition in a while, needing to make some noise and really consolidating their place in French football on not only the club level, but representing the league in Europe, because remember, they knocked out PSG from being in this competition by finishing second place last year. And, you know, now they got the result, and, you know, they left it late, a couple of second half goals there from Jakobsen, but still at the same time, now maybe that releases a little bit of that tension, because, you know, that first round, that's tough, because you know that there's always going to be a little bit of the element of not only the surprise, but the unknown. I mean, I wouldn't have been shocked if Montpellier doesn't have a whole lot of footage to work on against Zvezda. I mean, you see, you know, maybe a couple of notable names on their roster, but I think that's about it. And you have to give them credit. They got the job done, and that's all you can ever ask in a knockout competition.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have to correct myself again, because there was actually a lot more seeded teams that went out than what I first looked at. Bromby losing at home to LSK. They've gone out 3-1 on aggregate. Big win there for LSK, and obviously we mentioned earlier Fortuna, another seeded team, going out to Fiorentina. So actually a few seeded teams not being able to progress beyond the round of 32. But obviously Man City won as well, 3-0 against St. Poulton, which is good for them. Their reward for the last 16 with the draw was made earlier this week. They will face LSK of Norway. So I think that'll be an interesting one. JJ, was there any games in the, well, let's have a little look at it. Was there any games in the round of 16 draw that stood out for you?
Well, I think first we still need to mention about that absolutely heartbreaking win/loss for Glasgow City. They had to try and turn around a 3-0 decision on the road in Kazakhstan to Kazigurt, and they absolutely throttled them for 90 minutes, winning the match 4-1, but it was the unfortunate crossbar that has been so cruel to many that denied Glasgow City the ultimate comeback. That one's going to sting for a while, because you think about it, you know, that's a team that's definitely produced a lot of good talent over the years, and they come so close, but yet it's the mighty iron that denies Leanne Ross, the captain of the side, what would have been the winner.
Yeah, missed a penalty, didn't she, at 4-1, would have made the game 5-1, and they would have gone through 5-4 on aggregate. But as it is, Kazigurt go through on the away goals, and they will now face Lyon, which is a daunting task for them. But one of the things I didn't mention as well, we talk about the competitiveness and sometimes the lack of competitiveness that exists in the Champions League. Wolfsburg 12, Atletico Madrid 2. Now, that's not the aggregate score, That was the score on the night. Wolfsburg won 15-2 on aggregate against the current champions of Spain. Now, we know that Barcelona are now going into the season as the overwhelming favourites with the recruitment that they've had over the summer. But I genuinely can't sum that one up, JJ. 12-2 against a team that's won the Spanish league. Yes, a team that looks a little bit different. I think they've had some departures since they won the league, but that's insane, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking down through the Atletico lineup right now, and there is some really good quality on that team. You know, we know Sonia Bermudez, captains aside. They've got a couple of other, not only Spanish internationals, but I think a few French internationals there as well. And then you look at the opposite side in Wolfsburg, and Alex Popp scoring a hat trick inside of 16 minutes. Dickenman with two, Harder with two, Graham Hansen gets herself, Gunnar Stortier gets a goal. I mean, Almuth Schull, yeah, she gave up two goals on the night, but she could have probably just camped a blanket, picked out a good book, and, you know, when you have that team in front of you, forget about it. You know, it doesn't even matter that you need a goalie at that point, because that's just brutal.
I quite like that. Set up camp and read a book. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. So, sorry, yeah, let's go back to that round of 16 draw. Mentioned Kazaga have got to go to Lyon, and we'll obviously host Lyon over two legs. LSK Gvina will face Manchester City, who will, I think, fancy themselves in that tie. Chelsea Rosengard, the tie of the round for you, JJ?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, again, you've got two powerful teams. Rosengard is obviously, they've been there, done that. Chelsea, I think, as I said before, getting through Bayern was probably the big relief for them now that they might actually be able to go and express themselves in this competition after being knocked out for the last couple of years by German side. And, you know, they believe now, I think, at this point that they can go out and get themselves a result. I think the one, though, actually, I'm a little bit more curious on, Kieran, right now. Not that I know much about Brescia, but they got through the first round. But they take on Montpellier, who are in a very similar situation with Chelsea, in respect that now that they've got a chance to really establish themselves as a stronghold in this competition, they got through their first round well. You know, obviously overturning the deficit after the first leg to Zvezda. And, you know, now I think that's one of those, can they get through Brescia? Because if they do, I could see them making a run to the final four, or the last four, because of, you know, the strength that they have within their side. And yeah, that one has, it might be a little bit more one road traffic for them as opposed to that Chelsea Rosengard match, but I'm definitely keeping an eye on it.
Yeah, I think Brescia are one of those where they consistently kind of get through the early rounds and then they kind of struggle when they get to maybe the quarterfinal stage, but always there or thereabouts. Lost a few players to Juventus, who will no doubt be making a claim for Champions League football next year. But I think that, yeah, you're right. It'll be interesting to see how that one goes. Obviously, Fiorentina against Wolfsburg is an interesting one. We mentioned Fiorentina making their debut, knocking out seeded team Fortuna Hioring. That's going to be a difficult one against Wolfsburg. I look at some of the others, mate. I think some of them are a little bit more straightforward. Gintra, we gave them massive props for coming over Zurich, but Barcelona is a different proposition. Sparta Praha against Linköping. We haven't mentioned Linköping. Obviously came through in the last round. I would suspect that Linköping would be favourites for that. I think they're on the verge as well of claiming another Swedish title. I think they're maybe a point or 3 points away from claiming the Swedish Damallsvenskan. But I would expect them to overcome Sparta Praha. Bilk Kazaga against Lyon. I don't even think it's worth talking about that one. Lyon will come through that one comfortably. And then I guess at the bottom of the draw, you've got Stjarnan of Iceland against Slavia Prague of the Czech Republic. Regardless of who comes through that, that's, I guess, what you would class as one of the smaller teams. Definitely confirmed as being in the quarterfinal because one of them has to go through. So it'll be interesting to see how that one unfolds. I think the games are due to take place on the week of the 8th and 9th of November and the 15th and 16th of November, so only a few weeks away. So not long to wait for the round of 16 in the Champions League. JJ, staying in Europe, we've got to discuss the situation going on in Denmark. We were applauding the Danish Federation for finally coming to their senses, coming to an agreement with their players on some fairer terms, should we say, that surrounds things like economics, facilities, medical care, lots of different things. It now appears that those talks have broken down. Katia Krageland, our writer, who is obviously based in Denmark, has a good knowledge on football in Denmark and Scandinavia as a whole. She put a few tweets out this week, and I'll just kind of reel off the thread because she's a lot closer to this than we are and follows it very, very closely. She tweeted out this week that negotiations between the DBU and the Danish women's national team about a new deal have broken down again. On the positive side, at least, it seems the employer-employee question, the biggest hurdle previously, has been sorted. There were, of course, discussions and debates as to whether the players of the Denmark national team are actually classed as employees when they are representing the national team, and it would appear that that has now been resolved, so that's good. She carried on, but we have reverted back to the economics being an issue, despite the two parties reportedly being close to each other on that a month ago. As a result, as expected, the Danish women's national team have not shown up for training camp amidst the ongoing dispute with the DBU. The DBU have stated that they will inform the SVFF tomorrow at 10. So that was, she tweeted that out within the last half an hour. Will inform the SVFF tomorrow at 10 that the game is cancelled if players don't agree to the new temporary deal by then. Not looking good, JJ. Looks like Denmark's dispute is going to carry on, and we might see more cancelled matches like we did when Denmark were meant to play the Netherlands a few weeks ago.
And, you know, this is, it's disappointing because now you're, it's one of those, I think, what, fool me once, shame on, you know, actually, no, that's probably a horrible comparison. I'm just going to get right to it. It's disappointing. You know, you want these matches to go on. You want players to be treated as the respectable professionals that they are, and, you know, have them represent their nation to the fullest of extent. But if they can't even get through this, which it seems like, what, I think you and I were thinking a month ago or a few weeks ago that this was pretty much done and dusted. We've moved on. Great. Everybody got what they at least seemed what they wanted. And now all of a sudden it's just, well, you know, maybe that was smoke and ladders. It's really actually nowhere near close to being done. And we're going to have more matches being canceled, which this really is going to start to bring into the question now. You know, does this go into qualifiers? Do UEFA and maybe perhaps FIFA start to crack down, saying, well, if you're not going to be lining up a team, then, you know, we might have to, you know, not even allow you the opportunity to compete for a place. I don't think we've ever seen that before, but for me, it wouldn't truly even be out of the question because, let's face it, if you have a players' union and a federation butting heads more often than you see what's on the field right now, or at least getting a team on the field, it's not good. And I know, again, Katia has done a phenomenal job in keeping track of this, and really everything that, or the majority of the stuff that we know is coming through her. But yeah, this, it's just, it's frustrating. I think that's really where it comes down to.
Yeah, apologies. The SVFF that she refers to, it was the V that threw me. The SVFF is actually the Swedish Football Association. So the Danish Federation will let the Swedish Football Federation know, or the Swedish Football Association know, 10 o'clock tomorrow. This is 10 o'clock tomorrow being Wednesday, whether the game is going to go ahead or not. So it looks like, as it stands, that game will not take place. I mean, there's a long statement, if anyone's interested, on the DBU's website, and just looking at how they've completed this. They've put at the bottom, this is a deeply regrettable situation for the women's team and for everyone in Danish football. The DBU wishes to strengthen Danish women's football, and we have invested in the past few years to create both sporting and commercial development. That work is dependent on the women's team to stand up and represent Denmark in the World Cup qualification. The end, it says, the DBU's management will inform the Swedish Football Association tomorrow at 10 o'clock if the players do not stand up for the battle. Now, obviously, that's could be translated slightly wrongly because I'm using a translation service. In a nutshell, they are putting the emphasis and all the pressure on the players, and I'm not quite sure if that's right. But essentially we could have a situation where a high profile match against Sweden doesn't happen and all of a sudden the Danes are playing catch up because this is a World Cup qualifier, and I've no doubt if the game doesn't go ahead then the points will be awarded to Sweden. So it's such a shame, isn't it? You know, we thought we were making ground with the Danes and we looked at them and thought this is positive, and we thought it would be, you know, with Norway announcing that there's going to be new plans and new agreements with their players, that we were starting to make inroads, and it just looks like we're back to square one with the Danish situation, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's no kind of getting around it. And you know, I said just a few moments ago, if it does get into the qualifiers and they don't show up, yeah, points could be awarded, but you know, I think we're going to see more pressure from other sources now, saying if you can't, or if you continue to not show up, because remember, there's another match that comes up after this. They're going to turn around and play Croatia 4 days afterwards. What if they don't turn out in Croatia for that match? Surely UEFA is going to then pretty much come down and say, well, if you're not going to continue to play these matches, then we're going to have no choice, forfeit the rest of your, you know, qualification period, and you know you're going to be suffering some significant penalties for not, you know, turning out. And, you know, who knows truly which side is not being the one that's breaking, you know, that's really kind of try to see the end road and bring, you know, bang out a deal. Because at the end of the day, the Football Federation is going to always say one thing. The players are going to say another thing. You'd hope to believe, at least we do, that the players are the ones that are, you know, really trying to make the effort to, you know, get this job done so they can get themselves the money that they deserve, the benefits that they deserve, and, you know, continue to represent their nation as a whole.
Yeah. Well, we hope that it doesn't come to that. I would hate to see a team suspended from their qualification because they're trying to stand up for what they think is right, but it doesn't look like it's going to be resolved anytime soon. But let's hope by the time this show comes out that we might see something happen. But yeah, it looks like they've got 24 hours essentially, or less than 24 hours to get this resolved, otherwise the game against Sweden is not going to happen. But yeah, we come up to an international calendar. I know the US have got the two games against South Korea, albeit the one at the Superdome in New Orleans, and there's World Cup qualifiers in Europe as well. There's friendly matches. England play France on Friday. We won't kind of go into them now. We'll have a little review of some of those maybe next week. There's a lot of football coming up over the next few weeks in various parts of the world, so we'll cover those off in the next episode. And JJ, we'll do a little bit of a roundup of the NWSL season as well. The awards, I think, will all be announced by the time we record our next show, so maybe we can offer out our own rewards, and maybe we'll get someone else on to join us to have a little chat about that. But we'll wrap it up there, guys. A little bit of a shorter one this time round. JJ, thanks as always, mate. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And listeners, thank you very much as always. If you wish to contact us, you can do. We're on at WosoZone on Twitter. We're on WosoZone@gmail.com on email. And if you wish to listen to the show through a device, you can do. We're on iTunes. And of course, always check womenssoccerzone.com for latest podcasts and interviews and features. There's a couple of bits going up over the next few days. Make sure you read Audrey Baldwin's column, because that's really interesting. Learning about her experiences of playing in Kosovo, something a little bit different there. So yeah, thanks as always for tuning in. We appreciate it. Take care of yourselves. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.